And hello, this is Andy Bombeck, and welcome to another Mojo Music, where I'll be reading articles from Mojo Magazine, along with playing snippets of music. Please let Sun Sounds Radio know if you enjoyed today's program, or how it could be improved. Okay, as I mentioned last week, I'm going to continue reading articles from the December 2024 Mojo Magazine. I'm going to start off with an article about the reissue of Queen's debut album, Queen One. And then also the Beatles vinyl box set, 1964 U.S. albums in mono. And a buried treasure, Juliet Lawson, her album titled Boo. Ike and Tina Turner's best albums, and a classic album review of The Game by Queen. So I'm starting off with the reissue of Queen's first album, Queen One, and this article is titled, First in Line. Time to give the crown another polish. Queen's debut album rebuilt and extensively revisited over multiple formats that restore the originally intended running order, plus demos, live tracks, and a new stereo mix. Queen One. Words denoting regal splendor are cliched when discussing Queen, but tasked with describing this extensive 2024 rebuild of the band's 1973 debut, One Must Fall In. It comes in a plush purple box embossed with heraldic-looking gold script. It reminds you that Queen have the bottomless resources and appetite still for exemplary archiving. In terms of reanimating the fledgling band's unmistakable life force, it's a royal flush. Queen One is the debut album we always dreamed of bringing you, Brian May and Roger Taylor have said, alluding to CD1's stereo remix, forensic refurbishment of the original release's compromised sonics. Gone, you immediately notice, is the papery drum sound that at times made Queen's exuberant hello feel waterlogged. Now, Taylor's rapid-fire fills near the top of Great King Rat sound like a one-man Edinburgh tattoo. Better yet, each little element of Queen One's flamboyant, sometimes preposterous excess now has its own place in the sonic firmament. Youthful, uncomparable Freddie Mercury, close enough to touch. Rest assured, though, that the integrity of the original recording remains. There are no new overdubs. And here's a little bit of that Queen song, Great King Rat, from their album Queen One.
Come on, the time is right. The man is evil, and that is right. I told you,
yes, I told you,
and that's no
across 6 CDs, 1 vinyl LP, and a lavish 108-page book, this is Queen One viewed from various pertinent angles. CD 2, also remixed for 2024, has versions of 5 of the LP songs taken from the famed prequel. The band demoed at Delane Leah Studios in London in January 1972. While CDs 5 and 6 demonstrate how Queen One material translated live, firstly, via period sessions for BBC Radio, CD 5, then largely via set standouts from the band's celebrated March 1974 show at London's Rainbow Theatre, CD 6. The latter disc also brings previously unreleased rarities, including a cassette-sourced performance of Jesus, or Big J, as Mercury calls him, from London's Imperial College in August 1970, i.e. prior to John Deacon joining Queen on bass. Elsewhere, a rare performance of early Queen song Hangman, recorded in San Diego in March 1976, is infinitely more meat and potatoes. Its obvious debt to key early influence, Free, likely explaining why it was never given the studio treatment. And here's a little bit of the Queen song, Jesus, from Queen One.
Then I saw him in the crowd. A lot of people had gathered round him. The beggar shout to the lepers called him. The old man said nothing, he just stared about him. Before his feet he fell unclean, so the leper rang his bell. Felt the palm of a hand touch his head. Go now, go now, you're a new man instead. Started them to Bethlehem, made it hot throughout the land. Born was the leader of men.
Perhaps CD4's instrumental backing track version of Queen One, suitable for karaoke, announces its sleeve. Seems superficious, a little gimmicky. But all is forgiven listening to CD3, where outtakes, studio chit-chat, guide vocals, and false starts take us behind the veil. Oh, it's you, Bolsera, you bastard. It's you who's flat, laughs May, after aborting a take of Mad the Swine, have restored to the original LP's track listing. It's just bands, though, and the bond between he and Mercury is obvious. All right, Briny, Parvies patronizes Freddy seconds later, and off they go again. Subtitled Queen One Session CD3, is a fascinating glimpse into the groundbreaking complexity of what the band was attempting. We hear Mercury count in the bossa nova sections of Doing All Right, and note that this version leads with acoustic guitar, not piano. Further in, Liars, Primal, Riffage, and Operatic, one-word refrain, have monolithic power, prompting Mercury to at one point shout, "Get a load of this." Quite. And here's a little bit of that Queen song, Liar. The story behind Queen One's snatched wee small hours recording stint at St. Anne's Court in Soho, London, still seem romantic. Picture it, the console at Trident Studios, still warm from Bowie's Ziggy Stardust sessions, and Queen's four very different personalities jousting their way through the backward guitars, and Daft. Books with Maps, melodrama of Mercury's My Fairy King. Yes, you can hear the influences, but May's Old Fireplace and a sixpence fired guitar sound, and Mercury's exotic, shape-shifting song structures trod pastures new, while Roger Taylor's Castro pitch vocal harmonies brought Carl Ulf-like drama to the band's upper strata. Queen had yet to rein in their virtuosity in the full service of songcraft, but they already sounded like nobody else. They were aiming higher, though, and felt the original version of Queen One was close, but no cigar. Between the lines, the 1973 version sleeve notes said as much. This represents at least something of what Queen's music has been the last 3 years. The album was finished and mixed by November 1972, but a lengthy shop around for deals meant it wasn't released until July 1973, May recalled feeling sick at the loss of momentum, especially while attending a landmark 1972 gig by a certain glam icon. Bowie had made his mark, and we were still struggling to put a record out. Now, more than half a century on, May and Taylor can put all that angst and frustration behind them, presumably with the full blessing of reclusive former bandmate John Deacon. "Nothing here is done by halves, and the care and attention lavished upon this box set is obvious. It's been a delight to bring it up to where we wanted it to be," notes Roger Taylor. But revisiting Queen One has also left him amazed how bloody religious some of the lyrics are. "This is not, it's true, the cross-dressing, pointy-breasted Freddie Mercury of the I Want to Break Free video. Far less the incorrigible thrill-seeker of Don't Stop Me Now. Instead, the Zanzibar-born singer raised in the Iranian Parsi Zoroastrian faith brought rock professional Jesus, quite conceivably influenced by Andrew Lloyd Webber's recently premiered Jesus Christ Superstar and Liars Catholic Confession box Rifferama, Father, I Have Sinned. One verse of Jesus even finds Mercury watching Christ heal a leper with a touch of his hand. It was a tad unusual, certainly, but it was all grist to the Queen Singer's mill. Even more miraculous, Freddie songs lay ahead." Okay, now I'm moving on to the Beatles reissue. This article is titled "Love Me Dudes." A vinyl box set of the Beatles' first six American studio LPs in mono. The Beatles' 1964 U.S. albums in mono. America and Britain are twin nations separated by salt water, a common language, per George Bernard Shaw, and different Beatlemanias. The UK phenomenon in 1963 remains the gold standard for pop hysteria, a massive rush of love at the speed of light, detonated by a handful of singles and an album, Please Please Me, almost half of which was covers from the club sets. The former colonies were late to the party. EMI's Yankee arm, Capitol Records, spent that year exercising its right of first refusal. But we caught up fast, and this deluxe vinyl set of the Beatles' first six American studio LPs from Mono Master Tapes in period sleeves, also available separately, is hardly the full chaos. Add the cash-ins by 63 licenses, VJ, plus the sudden worth of the 1961 Hamburg sessions, and nearly two dozen U.S. albums and 45s were issued over 1964. Capitol's trade pitch for The Beatles' Story, a 2-LP studio documentary released that November, and a bonus in the box, put it bluntly, the greatest profit package in history. But this helter-skelter has a story of its own, a weirdly recorded, uniquely illuminating arc of breakthrough, at once belying and beholden to Capitol's mercenary disregarded for the parlophone canon, shortened LPs to save on publishing royalties, made up platters sequenced with the logic of a roulette wheel. If Please Please Me is the first giant step of a killer bar band led by two emerging Versio composers, Capitol's debut, Meet the Beatles, is the genius unleashed with visceral finesse. Nearly all John Lennon, Paul McCartney originals, largely drawn from the British jump forward, late 63's with the Beatles in this Telling America Doesn't Stand a Chance, the shotgun entrance of I Want to Hold Your Hand and I Saw Her Standing There, the hard Liverpool stares in Robert Freeman's iconic Mod Noir cover photo. And George Harrison is a writer from the start. Don't Bother Me. In his 2007 book, The Beatles' second album, Dave Marsh makes a convincing case for that April 64 grab bag of With, Remnants, and B-sides as an ungangly, fraudulent mess, capturing the greatest rock and roll band the world had ever seen, with maximum brute force. Here are the Fabs of Cavern and Star Club lore, heavy on the Detroit soul, the hip rescue of Devil in Her Heart, then a 62 obscurity by the Donnays, Lennon and Harrison's rare lead vocal exchange in the Miracles' You Really Got a Hold on Me. McCartney owns the Little Richard bonfire, Long Tall Sally, not yet out in the UK, and She Loves You, by then old news in Britain. Closes the record like radiant breaking news. In short, pure party from a band and year like no other. Beatles 65, released in December 1964, and based on the fourth UK LP, Beatles for Sale, comes a half hour of robust roots, Chuck Berry, Carl Perkins, and modernism, the plaintive sheen of No Reply, the feedback intro to I Feel Fine. As for the rest, there's not much reason now to love the truncated U.S. edition of A Hard Day's Night, except nostalgia. Something new is plenty of fun, but barely coherent. More covers, leftovers from the film, and the German language version of I Want to Hold Your Hand. And the early Beatles, actually a 65 release, is arguably the first Beatle reissue, Capitol's roundup of lingering VJ tracks. The inevitable irony is that the first-class packaging and mono fidelity makes this serial potpourri feel new and thrilling again, while none of it accurately reflects the Beatles' creative intent and daily momentum. Yet, no matter how you slice it, this is the historic, unbeatable sound of conquest. Britain has its gospel. This is ours. And this next article goes under Buried Treasure, and it's titled Surprise, Surprise. This month's Rediscovered Jewel, an abstract painting in folk rock clothing, and the artist is Juliet Lawson, and her album is titled Boo. In 1971, London-born singer-songwriter Juliet Lawson was looking at a 5-album deal with Island Records. I did a wonderful session one afternoon with Paul Samwell Smith, the first time I'd ever been into a studio, she says today. Then he left to produce a Carly Simon album in America, and it all fell through. Had the Island deal come off and put her in the company of John and Beverly Martin, Nick Drake, and Fairport Convention, it's likely Lawson's debut album, Boo, would have found itself a celebrated strand in that storied, folk-informed moment of British music. Instead, it sank without trace. In her early 20s, Lawson says she had only the vaguest notions of making it in music. Having listened to Broadway musicals as a kid, she was fully turned onto music by the Beatles, age 13. Her first guitar arrived when she was 15, and her own songs followed. The influence of U.S. singer-songwriters Carole King, Leonard Cohen, and Joni Mitchell, among them, completed the picture, as did doomed American in Europe, Scott Walker. "I used to cry listening to those early Scott Walker albums," she says. "I like orchestras and the emotion that can produce. I was flirting with, I suppose, somewhere between the Beatles and Scott Walker." With the assistance of her manager and later husband, Simon Crocker, she signed with EMI, subsidiary Sovereign, and went into Mayfair Studios in South Moulton Street in early 1972, and produced an ex-Trees guitarist, David Costa. She recalls writing five of the songs in a weekend on a Tascam Red Reel to Reel, and that the album went very quickly too, just 2 or 3 weeks probably. David Costa had quite a clear-cut vision for it, but nothing was changed in my songs. I enjoyed it, but I was intimidated. I remember a feeling like I was fitting in with everybody else, being called in at the last minute to try to do the vocals, which did jar with me a bit. I didn't really have any input about mixing or anything like that, but it was such a live album that sort of took care of itself. Also working fast were string arranger Tony Cox and backing vocalist Thunder Thighs, who famously furnished the doo-doo-doos on Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side. Adding saxophone was Lowell Coshill, who was briefly rendered mute by some rogue razor blades lodging in his instruments. There is little muted about Boo, though, blending the British folk rock and West Coast styles of its era. It's the arguably wayward sound of a young writer unrestrained by overthinking, prone to moody introspection, and equally at ease with melodious accessibility and more loosened moorings. The later songs are delicate smash and grabs of intrigue and stimulating confusion. Audition Anxiety opener Dear Fool finds percussion rattling and scraping as her voice trills and whirls over troubled piano with a detour into quotes from King Lear, hinting at the singer's secret desire to act. And here's a little bit of that song, Dear Fool, from Juliet Lawson.
Do you know if you got the audition? Did you play it straight? And did they listen to you, dear fool? A stone lodged in your shoe, but the show must go on. Yes, the show must go on. As flies are to wanton boys, so we are to the gods. They kill us just for fun and never count the odds. Oh, don't you wish you had fool? You must be strung up so bad.
Also curious is Who is India? With solo guitar and voice seemingly recorded outdoors, declaring, I wish I could order time. Before unbridled howling begins. I've worked on my voice a lot over the years, says the singer. But not in those days. I wrote sometimes out of my range, maybe. And here's a little bit of that song, Who is India by Juliet Lawson.
They've all changed and now they're asking, who is India? And a voice inside breaks down and says, you're standing on America, America, you stand on me. Oh, but I'm ticking over fine. I'm working round the clock. So late the waiter sleeps while we order still more wine. But we're living it up in Chinatown, eating it up and drinking it down. Oh, read along the line, it looks so bad. How we gonna feed them, pass the platter around? 'Cause there is no one wants to work out.
Other songs are more direct. The reflective, sweetly pained Rolling Back, with its threadbare talk of hearing the news today and things happening in Lancashire, plus notions of sunny Europe, approximates a meeting of A Day in the Life and Joni's California, its elegance leavened by Crosshill's antique reeds, the weeds in the yard. Also reflects on time, as the self-harmonizing singer wonders, maybe, lo you, a whole lot of something I just haven't got. There's something very intuitive and instinctive about the writing, says the singer. There's no narrative, it's just a whole lot of poems strung together. Somebody likened it to an abstract painting, something you don't have to explain. She recalls it being released in February 1973, coinciding with a gig in Aberdeen. But despite some approving reviews, Boo failed to take flight. I would have liked more recognition, she says, but I really never thought I belonged at all. Frog in the Jam is about being a misfit, certainly in the music business. I was too sensitive to what people said, and now I couldn't give a monkey's. And here's a little bit of that song, Frog in the Jam.
Thank you.
misplaced again, I usually am. A knot in the toothpaste, a frog in the jam. But don't blame it on my fellow traveler, 'cause he's my friend. At least he was, but I was wrong again.
Coincidentally, there was a cartoon of a monkey on Boo's cover, though Lawson cannot recall its significance. A second album, which a 1974 issue of Record Mirror named in tomfoolery, went unreleased. Lawson calls it a calamity and how not to make an album. Busy with life thereafter, she kept on writing, sometimes recording at North London's Pathway Studios. Now a painter, she continues to make music. This month, Boo is available on a new release on the Soul Jazz label, with two songs added from the Island Demo Sessions. One, Recon da Luna, concerns an Argentine cattle ranch owned by the Bovril Company before it was sold in 1971. Bovril was our family business, she says. My great-great-grandfather was a food scientist in Edinburgh in the 1860s, and he invented it for the soldiers in the Boer War. As for Boo, she's pleased it's getting a polish. It's like listening to a kid's sister or a grandchild. And I love it, unshamingly, she says. I don't think it's like anything. That always gets my vote.
Okay, now Mojo reviews some of the top Tina Turner and Ike and Tina albums. This is titled Tina Turner, Ike and Tina, the soul star whose story you just couldn't make up. As numerous biographers, film directors, and Broadway producers can testify, the Ike and Tina Turner story has everything. Man invents rock and roll, then discovers perhaps the greatest female vocalist in rock. He turns out to be a louse of the highest order and loses everything to drugs. She ascends to superstardom, defining what second act in popular music can look like. A star is born, eat your heart out. Born in 1931 in Clarksdale, Mississippi, Izzare Turner Jr. was 19 when his band, the Kings of Rhythm, made their initial foray into recording with Rocket 88, an R&B chart number one, credited to Jackie Brenston. The fame tore the band apart, and Turner put together another outfit. In her autobiography, I, Tina, the then Anna Mac Bullock, described going into a trance on seeing the new Kings of Rhythm in Brownsville, Tennessee. And here's a little bit of that song, Rocket 88s, by the Kings of Rhythm.
Jalopin', you heard the noise they make, but let me introduce my new Rocket 88. Yes, it's straight, just one way. Everybody likes my Rocket 88. Baby, we'll ride in style, moving all along. And
is smart and designed, black convertible top, and the gals don't mind. Sporting with me, riding all around town for joy. Blow your horn, Raymond, blow!
She soon had a son with the band's saxophonist in 1958 and made her singing debut on A Fool in Love, a top 30 hit for them in 1960. Ike rechristened her Tina Turner, copyrighting the name so he could replace Bullock if she quit. He also beat her up in order to convince her not to. This set the pattern for the years to come. Violence, intimidation, and soul music conjured from the darkest corners of the human psyche, road tested through a relentless work ethic and the sexiest show on legs. They made one of the greatest singles of all time and brought overt African-American sensuality into white homes via TV performances that broke rules and bust taboos. And then Ike discovered drugs, introduced to him, allegedly, by fellow Sun Label alumnus Elvis Presley. That could make him work harder and act worse. When Tina finally walked, she didn't have enough to be able to pay for a hotel room for the night. There was a twist in the tale, however, one that no script writer would have dared submit. When she died in 2023, aged 83, she had been officially retired for 23 years, had a fortune estimated at $250 million, and had publicly forgiven Ike. It would be good to think that her ex-husband, who fatally overdosed in 2007, age 76, had also found some peace within himself in his later years. It really is a story with everything, if only there were a simple way to describe the depths to which it descends and the heights to which it rises. And this is its soundtrack. Noted the number one album by Mojo Magazine, Ike and Tina Turner, Working Together. You say, forget the riverboat, this is a steamroller of funk, soul, and pop. The duo's most successful album is also their best and home to their biggest selling single, Proud Mary, in both Nice and Easy and Rough Modes. Covers of Get Back and Let It Be, adding new versions even Paul McCartney would have been happy with, complement five Ike tunes, two of them including the formidable title track by Ike Runut, that suggest, finally, his writing can now both consistently hold its own with the prestigious imports and match Tina's full-throttle performances. The rarely credited musicians in The Kings of Rhythm, meanwhile, deliver in spades. To quote one of the songs within, provided by Aileen Bullock, Tina's big sister, Working Together is funkier than a mosquito's tweeter. And here's a song off that album, Proud Mary.
Every now and then, I think you might like to hear something from us. Nice and easy. But there's just one thing, you see. We never, ever do nothing nice and easy. We always do it nice and rough. But we're going to take the beginning of this song and do it easy. But then we're going to do the finish rough. It's the way we do Proud Mary. Rolling, rolling, rolling on the river. Listen to the story now. Left a good job in the city, working for the man every night and day. And I never lost one minute of sleep, and I was worried about the way. we're rolling,
rolling,
rolling, yeah,
rolling,
rolling on a river.
And voted number 3 by Mojo Magazine, Ike and Tina Turner, Nutbush, City Limits. The Turners had only 2 monster hits in the U.S., 3 elsewhere, and following up the second, Nutbush, City Limits, almost proved their undoing, with Ike losing his own battles, creating the oxygen for rumor that Mark Bolan plays one of the guitars on Nutbush. Tina steps up as a writer, contributing 5 songs, including the title track. Once again, however, rejigged previous material, You Are My Sunshine, a despectrified River Deep, Mountain High, pads out the LP, but at its gritty, funkiest best, Fancy Annie, Daily Bread, it should really have kept them in the spotlight. Perhaps it would have done, had their next release not been a collection of gospel standards. Here's a little bit of River Deep, Mountain High off that album. And voted number 4, Tina Turner's album, Private Dancer. Don't be deterred by its obscurity, 12 million copies, or production, 4 sets of producers, so arguably it's that 1980s sheen that holds it together. This is a template for turning a legend into a stadium filler. With Tina seemingly washed up, capital bet on her adapting to the contemporary scene after hearing her guest slot on the BEF's 1982 cover of Ball of Confusion. In its wake came the modern music industry, heritage acts, Live Aid, etc. The buck stops here, then, but listen to that voice on Let's Stay Together. To Jeff Beck on the title track, to the feminist playback of Better Be Good to Me, a landmark achievement. Here's a little bit of a hit from that album, What's Love Got to Do With It, by Tina Turner.
Of your hand makes my pulse react, that it's only the thrill of boy meeting girl opposites attract. It's physical, only logical. You must try to ignore that it means more than
And now it's time for the classic album review, and this week it's the album The Game by Queen. Queen reached their commercial peak in the USA with the 1980 release of their 8th studio album, The Game. This was the only album by the band to reach the top of the charts in America and eventually surpassed 1977's News of the World as Queen's top seller with over 4 million copies distributed. The songwriting on this album is very spread out and diversified, with all songs written individually by band members and each of the four members writing at least two tracks each on this 10-track album, which is sold throughout and contains no real weak tracks or filler material. Queen rode the success of News of the World into a huge world tour in late 1977 and early 1978. They followed this up with a recording and release of the album Jazz, which reached the top 10 in the U.S. After another large tour, the group released their first live album, the double platinum-selling Live Killers, in 1979. Later that year, the group participated in Paul McCartney's concert for the people of Kampuchea with a live rendition of their 1974 track Now I'm Here being featured on the subsequent album. Co-produced by Reinhold Mack in his studio in Munich, The Game was recorded during two distinct phases. Four of the tracks were recorded during the summer of 1979, with the remaining six being produced nearly a year later in early 1980. This album marked the first time that Queen used a synthesizer, a practice they would adopt through most of their later work. Guitarist Brian May stated that the band was trying to get outside what was normal, and Mack's recording approach was different than what they had done through their first seven studio albums. The group also employed some pop subgenres to their tradition classic rock core, with elements of new wave and disco spread throughout this record. The hit song, Another One Bites the Dust, was composed by John Deacon and is largely built on his simple bass riff, which was inspired by the contemporary group Chic. Later, the song takes on a funky element when May adds guitar in the second verse before it goes pure disco during a bridge which includes a simple dance beat strewn by various synth sound effects. The formula worked, as Another One Bites the Dust sold 7 million copies as a single, reached the top 10 in Britain, and became Queen's second and final number one hit in the United States. And here's a little bit of that Queen song, Another One Bites the Dust. Queen's initial number one hit is also on The Game. Although it was released nearly a year earlier, Crazy Little Thing Called Love was written by Mercury as a tribute to the late Elvis Presley. This is also one of the few tracks in the Queen catalog where Mercury plays guitar, as he claimed he composed it in just 10 minutes while strumming the few chords that he knew. This all worked out as a rockabilly track with great style, rich harmonies, and a potent bass line and guitar riffing. Preceding the hit track on the album sequence is Deacon's very pop-oriented Need Your Loving Tonight, a bright and light tune driven by melody and produced with a much different approach than the more upfront and focused tracks on the album.
And here's some of the song, Crazy Little Thing Called Love by Queen. The album's final three tracks were each recorded during the 1979 sessions. Sail Away, Sweet Sister is a fine tune by May, where the guitarist takes lead vocals and performs his most potent harmonized guitar lead on the album. This song also features English folk elements and more great harmonies and production. Taylor's Coming Soon is percussion-driven, with a stylistic blend somewhere between ELO and Cheap Trick, along with some heavy new wave elements to top it off. The album concludes with May's Save Me, which starts as a sad song of lament, but soon launches into a dynamic theatrical piece. While Mercury is back on lead vocals, May played most of the instruments on the track, including acoustic and electric guitars, piano, and synthesizer. While not a big hit in the U.S., this album closer peaked at number 11 on the U.K. singles chart. The Game was a true worldwide hit, reaching the top 10 on charts in 11 different nations and achieving gold or platinum status in all major pop music markets. Queen and producer Reinhold Mack were also nominated for a couple of Grammy Awards in 1981, another measure of peak success for Queen. Unfortunately, once again, we're out of time. Please join me next week when I read articles from the January 2025 issue of Mojo Magazine, a long article about Neil Young, 2024's Archives 3 box set, and a classic album review of New Adventures in Hi-Fi by R.E.M. Until then, this is Andy Bombeck for Mojo Music, wishing everyone a happy new year, and keep on rocking. She leaves me in a cocoa sweat.